We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into this Thursday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm and Jeffrey Wright. I am finishing up vacation today, headed back in. So nobody's in the Clark Ford studio, but we'll tell you about that in a minute. Neil may jump in, may not. Not sure exactly what's going on. He is in Nashville for the SEC basketball tournament, Ole Miss and Texas A&M tonight. 6 o'clock start time for that one there at Bridgestone Arena as the Rebels try to make their season last at least one more day outside of any NIT possibilities that are there. I was not even aware of a format change for the NIT, so that does remain still a possibility for Ole Miss, I guess. But hearing a lot of buzz about them maybe turning that down, getting on with the offseason, the portal, and whatnot to make things better for next season. Chris Beard's contract extension, new contract announced yesterday. We'll hit that. Greg Byrne with an interesting comment that had a lot of the internet talking yesterday, that as well here on the show. Show brought to you by all Blue Sky locations around Mississippi, up and down I-55, throughout North Mississippi as well. They got their new superstore going up in Macomb. It is open. It's got a Subway attached to that bad boy. A lot of options there with Blue Sky. And then with Clark Ford, that's 662-257-1900 is the phone number, Highway 25 South in Amory, Mississippi. Just give Corey a call, no matter where you are in the car buying process. Give him a chance. Maybe you are farther along than you think. Let him help you out. He wants to be your truck guy, wants to be your car guy. He will take care of you. And then Jeffrey joins us every Thursday on the Campbell Clinic Hotline. They are now in Oxford for all your orthopedic needs. They accept walk-ins. A lot of great options there with Campbell Clinic as well. Jeffrey, you sent to me a text yesterday. It is a little bit like coming home from battle today. I mean, I'm weary, a little tired. It's a good thing. It's cool. When you have a seven-year-old turning eight, it's like the perfect age for the Disney situation. Second year in a row we've done it. But I don't know if there is – there are a few vacations where you're more ready to come home when it is done.
Yeah, you hit the sweet spot, though, because I am a Disney guy. I think that probably would surprise most people, but I'm a Disney guy. Aaliyah keeps asking, like, when are we taking Josephine? And I was like, we're not taking her until she can remember it. Like, to me, like, that's the key. Like, I have vague recollections of when my dad took me when I was like 4 or 5, and we went to Disney and then the Daytona 500.
Oh,
and it was the year Sterling Marlin won the first time. And I think like 3 laps in, I looked at my dad and I was like, are you ready to go? And he was like, oh, yeah. And so apparently, like, I was clutch for him in that category because I guess he was like with some customers, or maybe he was the customer, one or the other.
So apparently
I came in the clutch that. But I think the key for you is she can do stuff now for sure, like the good stuff. And then she's going to remember it. And then, but when you're on spring break, everyone's down there, like that is just, that's war. I mean, that is like, there's no other way to phrase it.
Yeah. You know, it's, you mentioned being a Disney guy, and I get asked a lot by people that aren't, like, what's the draw? Because like I had never been before last year, and now we've gone 2 years in a row, and I don't know how to explain it for anybody who doesn't feel this way, and obviously you do to some extent, is it's maybe the one vacation where I do put my phone up a little more. I do whatever. Part of that's because you're so busy. You have no choice because you're just moving. But it does hit me enough where I can have a week and have a little suspension of belief or disbelief. You know what I mean? Like you go, you just kind of, you get ingrained in it and go, you know what? You're trying to watch it through your kid's eyes. You're trying to like be that pure, for lack of a better word, and let it be just what it is in that way. And just enjoy the damn roller coaster. Like there is something to that I think is really good. And even though I'm so tired, I think that this is one place, as crazy as it sounds, that sort of resets my brain a little bit to work and get back going when you get home.
Yeah, whether or not it's intentional, because my joke used to always be, whenever anyone would say you can't put a price on happiness, I would always say, oh, yes, you can. It's whatever the price of a ticket to Disney is. Like that's the price on happiness. But there's also something built in, and I assume now, because it's gotten way more expensive. I haven't been post-pandemic or anything. Honestly, I probably haven't been since I was like 25. That's not true. MUS played down at the Wide World of Sports, and I gotcha. Went into the park day that day. So I don't know, I was 28, 29, something like that. But I think there's something to it when you're spending that much money, there's something about we're getting everything out of this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But because of that, like you said, put the phone up a little bit more. You're like, we're going to go experience this. We're going to do this. And whether or not that is the business model, whether or not that's like baked in, I think that does become the reality for a lot of people. And I do think it allows you to kind of take in the day and enjoy it a little bit more.
Yeah, I had somebody last night say, I just don't understand like a 12 to 14 hour day or being exhausted. And I'm like, no, you're spending money. You're doing whatever. You're going to get every bit of juice out of that orange or lemon when you're going through that. There's no doubt about that. But I did stop. I worked a little yesterday. Part of that because of Chris Beard, Ole Miss announcing a new contract, I think extended, they used in the social media. But I was told by people yesterday that it is a new deal. It's not simply a rollover. And an announcement, because I'll be honest, Jeffrey, when I first saw it, I thought, okay, this is probably a rollover. This is probably a PR thing to just get this out there with obviously other jobs open and him being still a very big national name. Ole Miss improving, even though it wasn't what people necessarily expected. But the more that I've dug into this, it's a new deal. It's a commitment to each other on both sides. John Rothstein reported a 6-year contract is what it is moving forward. So that runs you through the 2029-2030 season. I'm told that all the new terms will be announced in the coming days. Clearly, some media may report that prior to that. I do not currently have it. And that there is NIL commitment increases that Ole Miss is promising, guaranteeing, however you want to put it, more NIL into basketball. And that, frankly, Beard is giving a commitment to Ole Miss because I was told yesterday he was approached or to some extent pursued by 3 different programs out there. Was it more than that? I have no idea. But I was told of 3. As far as head coaching vacancies, and he was willing to go ahead, put this stamp on it and make this public. If you're Ole Miss, this is a great – I was kind of thinking about this. It is a great test case for you because you do have a national coach. You're letting him get into a second year of recruiting. You're promising NIL. You're kind of doing all you can. I think we are, if nothing else, about to see exactly what Ole Miss basketball can be in this era one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, timing-wise – I didn't think it was a coincidence that after Louisville announced that they're about to do a public search, they make it official and fire Payne. With that being said, I don't know of anyone that believes that Louisville has just now started their coaching search. So from an optics perspective, I didn't think that those were coincidental. You know, the way I look at this season, it's not apples to apples, but doesn't this feel a lot like Lane's first season, where even though it's the COVID year and, you know, everyone to a certain degree was just excited to play football, I think Chris needed to show, hey, I can make this into something. And while, yeah, it kind of faded, there was definitely some proof of concept. Like there were several nights where the building's full and sure. And people were excited to watch Ole Miss basketball. And with Lane that first year, it's like, okay, there wasn't, you know, it wasn't, you know, some type of amazing performance, but, you know, you end up going, what they go 4-5 because one of those games got canceled, whatnot. They win the bowl game, they go 5-5. But there was some proof of concept and there was reason to build some excitement. And I guess the one key difference would be with Chris, there's the fading down the stretch versus with Lane, you kind of end on the high. But I just don't think they're necessarily I think that's kind of where the comp ends. But to me, it's you proved with Chris Beard that you can make people care about Ole Miss basketball if you put a good product out. And now you've got the coach. Well, try to give him as much as he can to put out the best possible product. And I presume with the NIL commitments, that's where all this is headed. And to me, this now like begs the question of, are we heading to the universe where the jobs that we did not think of as traditionally good jobs, they're now starting to become better and better jobs? We've seen a little bit in football. We've talked about it, you know, the jobs that we think of historically are great. They're falling back, and some other jobs like Ole Miss that got ahead of the curve on structure of NIL and whatnot, like they've elevated themselves. And I think that's kind of the key question to me. It's like, I don't know, is the Ole Miss basketball job better today than the Louisville basketball job? Something that would seem insane and asinine to say even 10 years ago. I don't know. Maybe we're headed to a universe where that is indeed true.
Well, I think that's where you're talking about the parallels, because you look at Ole Miss football and you mentioned collective, and you get a coach in Kiffin, and who cares how you did it? You got him. You made that happen. He's worked out, and Ole Miss did elevate. They elevated from a average to slightly above average program to a potentially elite program as things move forward, a program that is expected to be in the playoff. I saw somebody who's on your show every week, Blake Topmeyer. He had Ole Miss, if he were seeding the SEC going into 2024, number two or number three behind Georgia and maybe behind Texas, depending on how you do that. There has been that elevation that you're talking about in basketball. I guess that's kind of, yeah, we're making the same point, is that Beard is similar to Kiffin in that way, frankly, more established, and that any rise or elevation, maybe it's not exactly the same, because I don't think we're talking about Ole Miss as some top 10 program or something. But at the same time, there is this thing of, hey, the job is better, the program is better, and you take an incremental rise in that same way at that point. As you do that, Neil McCready now joining us. Neil, I'm assuming that you can hear me here. We're discussing Chris Beard contract, a new contract. Just, I keep saying contract extension, but that's not actually right from a semantic standpoint. Commitments on both sides. The long-term deal is kind of whatever. I don't care about that. That doesn't matter in today's world of college athletics. But what did yesterday sort of tell you as far as what both these sides are saying to each other?
Told me that Ole Miss knew that Chris Beard was coveted elsewhere and that they needed to get out in front of this. Told me that I kind of sensed this a little bit on Saturday when they got blown out by Texas A&M, that bug, the way this season has ended, has bugged him in a way that I don't think he would have been comfortable leaving necessarily. And I don't think there was anything that's a sure thing that's out there that's a sure thing better. And, you know, I mean, he said he feels like they're just getting started. There's a lot of unfinished business. Those were his words yesterday. I mean, I give a lot of credit to Ole Miss, because one of the reasons I came to Nashville, it obviously wasn't because I think they're going to win 4 games in 4 days. One of the reasons I came was because at some point someone was going to have to ask Chris Beard, hey, your name is popping up in some other places. Legitimate media people are mentioning your name for certain jobs. Can you comment? And it was going to put him in a weird spot, but it was part of what we have to do. And they completely avoided that by getting ahead of it yesterday. I'll give them credit, because typically, and this is, I don't know if it's going to piss people off or not, Ole Miss has not always been particularly great at public relations. That was pretty smart. Getting it out on the day that the tournament was getting started, the day that Chris Beard and Ole Miss were going to have a shoot around at Bridgestone, to get ahead of it like that was pretty bright.
Jeffrey, any thought there?
Yeah, no, I agree with Neil that historically, or at least in my lifetime, I would actually argue Ole Miss is pretty bad at PR, or has been pretty bad. And you've gotten some new blood in there. And I think whether or not it was intentional, whether or not it was trial and error, whether or not it was becoming a bigger player in a new universe, I do think that they have professionalize the operation in a shorter period of time than I have been expected. Like, I just feel like more and more times than not, you find yourself going like, damn, that doesn't feel like something they'd normally do. And that's a credit to everyone over there. You know, Keith has done a great job.
From a pure basketball sense, I mean, I'm told from people pretty close to it that all bets are off as it pertains to anyone on the roster. The only two people you can probably definitely count on being on that roster next year are the two kids that they've signed. If you're potentially adding 10 or 11 new people, most of whom from the portal, you got to get to it like this right this moment. You can't afford for there to be any obstacles, any distractions, anything taking away from your recruiting efforts. Kids asking questions like, "Hey, are you going to be there next year?" You can't have any of that. So, I think that's what they were able to avoid also, because the portal is going to be chaotic and crazy and probably pretty damned expensive.
Right before you logged on, Jeffrey and I were talking about, you know, what Ole Miss hopes is some parallels between the football program and the basketball program. And I don't mean apples to apples, because nobody's expecting the basketball program to become a top five program or top whatever program here in the next year or two. But at the same time, you know, you get into a coach, you get a successful coach, a nationally relevant coach, and you have some different things. He mentioned the words proof of concept for this. Did you feel like there were things in this basketball season that were a proof of concept for Ole Miss and Beard of taking whatever that relative step is with the program?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's a good coach. You can see it when you watch his teams play. I mean, he doesn't like this team. It's obvious. Yesterday was the first day. I've covered the SEC tournament basically every year for the last, I don't know, 25 years. I've been to more of these little shoot-arounds the day before a team plays than I'd like to think about. Like last year, I think I went to like 7 shoot-arounds doing the story about Chris Beard. I've never seen a team actually practice in a shoot-around. They actually practiced for 40 minutes at Bridgestone, and they had practiced earlier in the day at Tennessee State. I mean, they were like, guys were getting hit in the face and stuff. I mean, he referred to it as shaking the trees. They definitely were shaking trees. The loss on Saturday pissed him off. You could tell that. The way that the lack of effort. Yeah, there's proof of concept. They had a lot of people there at games this year. There were, especially back in January, they had some moments when you could see what it could be like in that building with a competitive program. And look, you're going to see it today and especially tomorrow at Bridgestone. This is just not a sport you can punt. You just can't punt men's basketball. It's illogical. There's too much attention on it. It actually makes money. The sport garners attention. People talk about it. You just can't consistently suck at men's basketball and go, oh, well. You just can't. I think you can do it in women's basketball. And I think you can do it in a lot of other sports, but I don't think you can do it in men's basketball. It's still too relevant of a sport for you just to go, this doesn't work for us. We'll turn our attention to something else.
I mean, to Neil's point, if anyone in the league were going to punt basketball, it'd be Alabama. And honestly, yeah, Auburn would be right there with them. They do not punt basketball.
Not even a little bit. No, they've reinvested in it.
Yeah.
They've upped the investment in it.
I mean
Vanderbilt punts and everything, so okay. But that's it.
I mean, I think Vanderbilt's problem, and I think Neil would agree with this, is Vanderbilt's problem is they're just not seriously committed to, you know, they're just not seriously committed to it. I mean,
Vanderbilt's problem in men's basketball is that they're more committed to political correctness and wokeness than they are actually competing in men's basketball.
They're just committed to appearances. But you know, are you going to have a competitive NIL budget? I don't know. I mean, to Neil's point, I mean, that's kind of the other thing that I'm fascinated by this offseason with the transfer limitations getting struck down and the NCAA just throwing their hands up. I mean, my suspicion is in basketball in particular, this portal season is going to be insane.
Yeah, 100%.
But Neil, that's expensive as hell. I mean, you look at this, and I mean, I reported this morning, we've all known this. It wasn't like it was breaking news. Ole Miss is upping their NIL investment in basketball. They're having to up their NIL investment in football constantly, but that's what the market dictates. I mean, the money necessary is off the charts here. You mentioned only two players back potentially, or at least that's the only guarantees. Let's put it that way. That's really damn expensive. I mean, what are we talking about to put a roster together in that landscape?
No, because what it took to put a roster together last year, that amount of money won't put a roster together this year. Right. I mean, I referenced this on the message board. I'm going to be really careful here because it was told to me on background only. But there's a coach in a Power Four league, who last year had about $4 million to put together a roster and said, honestly, it's not enough unless you nail every evaluation. Well, no coach nails every evaluation because you can't really predict chemistry and how guys will handle moving and playing with the new system and new teammates and all of that stuff. You just can't predict all that stuff. So you're going to have evaluation mistakes. That's inevitable. So if $4 million is not enough, what is? And how many programs can put $5, $6 million worth of salary? I refuse to call it NIL. They don't even do any appearances. $6 million of basketball salary together for players. I don't know the answer to that.
I guess this is my question because I'm with Neil. Like, I know because the Pepperdine job's available. I've not been contacted yet. I'm still waiting. I know it's still very early in the process for the Waves, but I'm sure they'll be getting back to me. But I do know somebody that has history with the program. He was just kind of on background asked, what would it take to take the job? And he's like, basically $2 million a year guaranteed and then $3 million for a roster. And this is the West Coast Conference. I mean, so do the math of if you're going to try to compete at a power league. I mean, it seems to me that at least $5 million would probably be the number. But, you know, that's kind of the other thing. Everything right now is just a projection. We're about to see everybody going to market, and I have no idea. It seems to me like a lot of times what's going to happen is teams are going to go in thinking they've got enough money, and they're going to probably get outbid. And so then you're going to have these teams that are waiting until August to kind of see what's left over and what they can maximize with. But that's kind of what Memphis did. And Memphis had a great start at 15-2. And then it just fell apart because of the issues that Neil's talking about. Chemistry, you know, a commitment to the actual program itself. Like, these are all issues that you're going to go through. And I just keep coming back to this question, and I don't have a great answer for it. Maybe the answer is it'll just be this way. How long can you reasonably depend on your boosters, your alumni funding the roster? Because I just look at this, and to me, it just does not seem sustainable, but maybe I'm the idiot. Maybe I just don't recognize that eventually everybody just wants to pay for wins.
I think it's sustainable until you lose, and it immediately becomes really, 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 really not sustainable. There's very little middle. You can get caught up in the winning and the emotion and the rise, and then when you have that one or two bad years, it goes bleh.
And then it also feels like it's going to be really difficult. Like, once you lose it, to get it back, and maybe this will just maybe this will result in more coach turnover, because the way to get it back, schools will just start to recognize, well, we just got to get a new coach in. That'll bring in some new lifeblood. It'll feel like a reset to the money people. But the problem for me is when people get used to not spending and they change their habits and they're spending that money on elsewhere, you know, other stuff, that's when it really gets hard to get them to get back into, hey, let's start ponying up. And also, it's going to get expensive because the same people that you're depending on to pay the buyouts and everything are the same people that you're going to try to go depend on to, you know, to refill the coffers.
It's a weird thing. Like, I'm watching what happens with him in the next few weeks. Had a really fun freshman season at Mississippi State. If you're a Mississippi State fan, he was a highlight of your season. And there's rumors abounding that the market for Josh Hubbard is going to be just astronomical, that it's got lots of bidders. If you're State, can you afford to let him get away? And if you get to a point where you can't afford to keep him, how do you then turn around and tell your boosters that you're trying to get to fund your basketball salary? Well, we had this kid from Mississippi who came in, had a great freshman season, and he used it to get a big deal at fill in the blank U. I don't know how, if I'm a fan, I don't know how that doesn't turn me off. I don't know how I don't go, this is stupid. But again, this is where, and I've said this before, it's where I simply can't relate to this part of it. And so I look at it and I've gotten to where these kinds of conversations, I almost just check out of them, not in a mental way, just by me saying, I don't know that I'm qualified to speak on this, because I don't know that if I weren't in media, if I were in business or something, I don't think I'd give the NIL. I think it's silly. I wouldn't. I'd be like, no, if you want me to buy tickets, I'll buy tickets. You want me to contribute to a alumni association thing? Okay, sure. But I'm not paying for players' salaries. Not when I'm paying for my own kids to go to college. I would check out of that. And so that's the part that for me, I just don't relate to it well enough to even comment on it.
And that's one of the interesting things, is you need so much corporate or business or big donor supplying this. That's the bulk. You need everybody in, but into a pretty good amount. I mean, you need a very, very much steroid version of, like, what is it, IPTE that Clemson started back in the day. I mean, it's that kind of thing. Ole Miss has done a pretty good job with that, with the collective, with getting everybody involved. Because what you're essentially doing is trying to market fandom and increase fandom to some crazy higher level, to where they're invested and it really matters. I mean, you're having to really make it matter. And it's a hard thing to do in general. It's what athletic departments have been trying to do with the college spectrum side of things forever. And it's needed to so much more of a thing. It's your money. It's that mid-level donor who's deciding whether to donate. We talk about this. I've got buddies who go, hey, if I'm donating to NIL the way they want me to, I'm not taking certain vacations. I'm not doing this. Like, how am I picking that over family? What do I do here? How do I do here? And it's up to the Walker Jones at every school and Walker here to go, yeah, I get that, but what about this? And you're really trying to, you know, push the emotions and that thing, and also pay them back in a way that they feel like it's justified. And it was where I was going with this next. I think it's a decent segue. And then I want to get into Greg Burns' comments before I lose both of you, too.
I want to do one more thing. I want to say one more thing, because I think you bring up a good point. Because I think initially, like when we were transitioning to this world, I'll use the example of Memphis. Memphis believed that they were in a unique position because they have FedEx, who is tied in with the university. You have AutoZone, who supports the city. There was some corporate money. And what they found out is it's really hard to bring in the corporate dollars. And like, I just use the example of the NFL. With the NFL, like, I can't think of a more corporate sport right now than the NFL. But most of the salaries are all paid for by the television deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, you know, it's not like Delta is funding the Falcons roster. You know what I mean? Like, they're paying for imaging, for branding, for marketing in the stadium, in the arena, but they're not funding the rosters. And I don't know. Like, I thought maybe the corporate route would be a way to go. And I'm sure it's working for some people. Like, you know, I'm sure for Georgia, Delta's, I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that they're on the headsets at for the Bulldogs, on the coaches' headsets. Sure. But I'm just not convinced that corporate money is the route. It seems to me the schools that are doing the best with it, it's just they're organizing their boosters.
I want to be fairly quick with, yeah, it is. It's booster organization at every level. You need the grassroots. You need the people paying 20 a month. You need the mid-level guys. You need the big things. I mean, it has to be an all-in thing, no matter what the size of your fan base is. And I mean, frankly, the Grove Collective's put a bit of a a textbook on ability to do that. That, you know, if larger schools that have more people copy that in a way, they're going to automatically increase their ability to win and get players simply because it is the roadmap for that. Neil, what I was going to say, can you hear me? We good?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay. My question here before I move on is, I'm looking at the SEC basketball tournament. Last night, Arkansas won, Georgia won, Missouri ends up going 0-19 overall. Today, your slate of games, Ole Miss, A&M, State, LSU, Arkansas, South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida. And then you've got the four teams with byes at the top four seeds tomorrow. Tennessee projected to be a one seed in this NCAA tournament right now. College basketball is more similar to football in that who you play matters. You got to win inside the league to win nationally because of seeding and placement and that kind of thing. Who do you see in the SEC in basketball right now that's on the downswing? Where would you sell stock if you had it in the SEC for basketball?
That's a good question.
Because if Ole Miss is going to move up, you have to move past people. And when I look at this, I have a hard time picking out automatic downs. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week. Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto. Also, 60 add-ons help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. So what are you waiting for? Get started today. Get after your goals. Everything from pancakes, smoothies, and more. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. No prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are always ready to heat and eat. So there's no prepping, no cooking, no cleanup needed. Flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule deliveries any single time. They got 2-minute meals when you need to fuel up fast. Restaurant quality meals ready to heat. Again, whenever and wherever you are, it's the perfect solution. If you're looking for fast premium options with no cooking required, sign up and save. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. So head to factormeals.com/MPW50. Use code MPW50 to get 50% off. That's code MPW50 at factormeals.com/MPW50.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. A common misconception about relationships is they have to be easy to be right. Sometimes the best ones happen when both people put in the work to make them great. Therapy can be a great place to work through the challenges and face in all of your relationships, whether it's with friends, work with significant others, or really anyone. When you put that work in, great things can happen in those relationships. BetterHelp is an awesome way to do that because, you know, maybe you talk to people who have preconceived notions, family members, they're emotional about topics. This is somebody just for you. They can help you. If you don't like who it is, you can switch providers. You can find somebody else. You can do all these different things with BetterHelp to get the help you need. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. Design can be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And again, switch therapist anytime for no additional charge. Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/MPW today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MPW. Podcast is brought to you by the Ole Miss Athletics Foundation. Spring sports are underway. Single game tickets for baseball are now on sale. Also, 2024 football season ticket and donation renewal deadline is March 31st. Got a few weeks left on that. So if you want to get your priority points up before seat or parking selections, call the Ole Miss Athletics Foundation, 662-915-7159. For further information, you can also visit givetoathletics.com, and they thank you for supporting Ole Miss student athletes and say, go Rebels.
Yeah, well, and even some of the teams that are lower than like, I'm not selling on Arkansas, for example. I mean, they, you know, two Elite Eights and a Sweet 16 in the last 3 years, and he has a talented team. He'll probably put a talented team on the floor again next year.
Yeah, we're going to sell
like some of the things Mike White's done at Georgia. I wouldn't complete.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm not sure I'm selling Georgia. Yeah, I'm not sure I'm selling Georgia. My internet sucks. I apologize.
No, you're good.
But I'm not sure I sell Georgia. And then after that, I kind of sell Missouri. Maybe that's who I sell is Missouri. They're not, from everything I can tell, that they're still pretty resistant to the NIL thing across the board. I don't know, Chase. I'll tell you who I'm not selling on. I'm not selling on Florida. All Florida jokes aside, I watched them practice yesterday. That is a talented roster, and he's been able to actually do it the old-fashioned way a little bit. He's got guys that have been in his program for 2 or 3 years.
I think to answer this question, you kind of have to do this mental exercise of, if we're going to operate under the assumption that there is a limited amount of money at the school to go around, I think you've got to sell the schools that you think will max out football and punt kind of on basketball. You know, back to Neil's initial point. I don't know. I mean, I know. Is LSU maybe one? Because it feels like
if you're going to elevate inside the league, you have to be better than LSU. Yes. I mean, whether we're selling or not, you have to be better than them if you're moving up.
Well, I just look at LSU and it's like, okay, they're clearly willing to spend money on women's basketball. We know that they're spending money on baseball. Does that mean that they're not as competitive in basketball? I mean, I know with McMahon, he came in there and it was a mess. He's trying to clean up, and I think they were a better team the second half of the season than they were the first half of the season. So, but I mean, like, to me, like, that's kind of the schools that I'm targeting. The schools that I'm targeting are, who do I think is just going to say, well, we're just going to do everything we can in football and put basketball aside. I mean, I hate to say it, but like, one of those schools you got to pass Mississippi State.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do agree with Neil on Arkansas. Like, I don't think Arkansas's down forever.
No, I still think they're going to fund basketball before they fund baseball, maybe fund football. They're the weird school that might actually punt football.
And, you know, I guess to a certain degree, South Carolina, but man, I think that guy's done a hell of a job.
He has. He's done a phenomenal job.
And, you know, I think Florida, to Neil's point, Florida's in this, Golden might be in the sweet spot of, people are so pissed off at the football program. I mean, you got Spurrier, you know, going, what the hell's going on here? That maybe that gives him an opportunity. But I mean, I think the reality is, we might be talking about, it might be like the Big 12. It might be heading towards the Big 12 in basketball, where it's not like you've got to be Kansas if you're Ole Miss. You don't have to contend for the league. You've just got to be kind of in that top half. I mean, look at what Jamie Dixon's done at TCU. You know, TCU's not contending for the Big 12. But he puts a competitive team out there. They're going to make the tournament for the third straight time. That's never happened in the school history. It's like, the entire time, I'm sure Jamie Dixon's just looking at Pitt thinking, like, how you like me now, buddy? But, like, you know, I think that might be the model. It's not necessarily that you've got to be, you know, top six in the program, because you're also, keep in mind, you're adding Texas. Mm-hmm. You're going to be adding Oklahoma. There's schools that care about basketball, maybe not to the level of, you know, North Carolina and Duke and Kansas, but they care about basketball. To me, it's kind of the key of, you've got to identify those targets that you can pick off, and you got to stay in front of them.
No, look, it's an 8 to 10 bid league potentially with those two added.
Yeah.
Minimum of 8. They're going to get 7. I'm assuming Texas A&M beats Ole Miss tonight. I think the SEC is going to get 7 bids this year. It's half the league's getting in.
Do you know an answer here, Neil? Do you still anticipate Ole Miss not accepting an NIT bid were it to be extended?
Yeah, first and foremost, this assumption that they're going to be invited to the NIT is one that I'm not sure that I completely buy, but yes, I think they will reject it.
It looks like this new format, which I didn't know until yesterday or the day before. Yeah.
Chase referenced this happened last summer. They changed the rules. So it used to be, you know, if you were a mid-major and you won the regular season, but you were in a one-bid league and you didn't win your tournament, you automatically got a bid. They've gotten rid of that rule. So TV has stepped in and saying, we want names that people recognize and have fan bases. And so the big boys will have an opportunity.
The NIT is guaranteeing two teams based on net rankings from each of the six conferences: Atlantic Coast, Big East, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac-12, Southeastern Conference. The top two teams in the net not qualifying for the tournament from each conference, regardless of win-loss record, will be selected. So Ole Miss will get a bid that they can accept or deny if they have one of the two best net ratings of non-SEC tournament teams.
I mean, to me, this was the trial balloon of why we're seeing the talks about tournament expansion. It's not because, you know, as they're selling it, to survive, we've got to fix the one thing that we do well. It's, hey, it's the the TV people are telling us they need more of the big boys in this, and we can't just eliminate these mid-majors because of the way that the tournament's structured. So we've got to expand that way. So to me, like, that's kind of where all this is. That's where all this is headed.
Ole Miss has the number one net of non-tournament teams if A&M gets in as of right now. If A&M doesn't get in, they would be number two. Now, here's the sticking point. If you're just talking about Ole Miss's ability to get a bid, is that Ole Miss is at 92, LSU's at 95, and Georgia's at 100. And those two teams are also playing today.
Yeah, both LSU and Georgia have chances to get high caliber wins on neutral floors today. Like LSU can beat Mississippi State. Georgia can beat Florida. I'm not sure I expect either one of those outcomes, but neither one would be shocking.
Now, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on analysis for the NIT, but just putting everybody up to speed, that's where we sit on that. I want to transition because I want to get.
I'll say this, Chase. The rumor is, and it's pretty decently sourced among people that are close to the basketball program. Nobody at Ole Miss has told me this, but people who are close to it believe that they'll reject the bid.
Yeah, that's what I believe too. But just giving everybody up to speed info there, because frankly, I was wrong. So this caused a bit of a message board, not a stir, just a disagreement yesterday. I thought the board handled it pretty well considering everything going on. The LMA athletic director, Greg Byrne, speaking on Capitol Hill, in his opening address, he said this, and I think it's in context. I was looking for more information to see if Ross potentially pulled out something out of a paragraph, but for the most part, it's in context. Quote, if it weren't for football, we would not have 21 sports at the University of Alabama. We do not want to see college sports lose women's sports and Olympic sports. So, end quote. Couple things here. And first off, I think it's worth saying nobody is coming out, because this is one of the board's the main thing. Like, I saw somebody talking about, you know, opportunities for women and us, because we just see what this means from a business standpoint, not wanting that to be the case. I mean, we all have very much an interest in women and daughters succeeding in this sports world in a number of ways here. Is Byrne potentially...
For the record, I am not banking on my daughter being a very good athlete. Now, our mutual friend Marshall Bush has pointed out to me, if she can break 90 and has good grades, she can play golf at just about anywhere other than like Stanford. So he's gotten me thinking about, all right, I might have to be putting clubs in her hands sooner than I wanted to.
So Byrne is, I mean, here's one thing I do believe. I do believe he is politicking in some way to avoid a revenue sharing and a thing that will completely change the landscape as far as how administration are paid and moved and all the things we talk about. But, you know, Andy Staples went on the other side of this yesterday, and I said he's somewhere between narrow-minding and being obtuse on purpose. Neil says that he completely believes it because he and the two of them had a conversation in Nashville last summer about this, and I respect that. But no one is arguing that D3, D2, 1AA schools, FCF schools, whatever, make it work all the way down. But they're also not paying the number of salaries, the number of people and whatnot, and have to fix it down. What bugged me yesterday with all the rhetoric was that the system is in place as it is, and there are massive consequences to change into another system, including tons of lost jobs, potentially lost sports, probably lost sports, and also massive salary cuts up and down the board at the C-suite level and proceeding all the way down. In my example was, yeah, sure, Mississippi College makes this work, but nobody gave Mississippi College $200 million a year, told them to spend like they had $225 million a year for 10 years, and then all of a sudden said, okay, never mind, now you have $30 million, make that work. That is where we're missing the human element of this, is that it does not freaking work because people are not going to automatically go, you know, Beard and Lane and Keith and everybody down the executive level, you're all taking 65% cuts to make sure that men's golf and women's golf is preserved. It's just not human nature. It doesn't work like that.
I was going to yield to
I do this all the time. It is the real world versus utopia. Utopia sounds amazing. Nobody can find it. You can go in the forest and hunt for unicorns if you like. You're not going to find one. You can go fishing for mermaids. You're not going to find them either. You can look for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow till you're just absolutely out of oxygen, and you're not going to find it. The chaos that is coming if we go to a revenue sharing model is one that I just don't think people fully grasp. And look, Greg Byrne, you can think what you want. You can look at him and say, he's just Alabama. He's Alabama. He's only looking out for Alabama. Greg Byrne could have any AD job in the country, basically, that he wants. I believe he turned down a pretty high profile AD job fairly recently. I think Greg Byrne's just being honest here. If you go to this model, a ton of opportunity is going to be lost. A ton of opportunity is going to be lost. And people are going to have to decide, is that worth it or not? And again, I'm not qualified to answer that. I just think there's going to be carnage in the wake. And when that comes, nobody should be surprised. That's all I'm saying. And everyone does the Nick Saban's talking, and he's mad because and you know what? And you might be on to something. Two things can be true at once. He can also be telling the truth right now. And when it becomes nothing, here's my experience with college athletics. If college athletics becomes about nothing but the money, I just wonder how long that's truly endearing to people.
Well, several things here. So I think it's also important to note, and I don't remember the exact order, but I don't feel like Nick Saban and Greg Byrne went up there without knowing the topics they were going to talk about and being fairly in agreement. Nick called for revenue sharing, but without the employee model. Okay, I think that makes some sense. The big hang up that I have is that how are they going to legally make that happen? Because what has been clearly stated is that if you're not going to make these players employees, you cannot have any restrictions on them. Like, that's where we're headed. Like, someone's eventually going to challenge eligibility. And to Neil's whole question, this is where I heard Neil Brennan say this on a podcast, and a lot of issues that we deal with today, because of the nature of society where it's like we get the loud voices from the activists on one side and the loud voices from activists on the other side, it makes it into this like debate Whereas most people probably internally, using a Supreme Court metaphor, it's kind of a 5-4 decision. Like, I think about it in these terms. Like, I don't think college should be the professional world. Like, I do, I kind of find myself agreeing with a lot of what Nick says about development. And yes, it's difficult to hear the message from somebody who has profited off the model in a fashion that we've probably never seen. Like, I do acknowledge that. At the same time, that doesn't mean that I want to dismiss what he's saying. The problem that I just always come down to is this money has to go somewhere. And this money has gotten astronomical in such a short period of time that you sit there and you find yourself going, what is the answer? Because, like, if I'm trying to say, you know who I think deserves the money the least, I'm never going to come down and say it's the players. It's the ones doing it. It's the ones putting their bodies on the line. I have no idea. But, like, I think the problem that I keep seeing is that everyone thinks that there's a simple solution, while I feel like I'm just continuously saying, like, man, this is a lot more complicated than we're acting like. And I to Neil's point, those that think there's a simple solution, whether you're on the get it back to student athlete model, or whether it's, hey, man, this free market, everything's great. It's all great. It's all great. Man, I just keep thinking, like, there is some middle ground, because if you turn this into just professional sports, where's the mystique? Like, eventually it starts to lose really what its market differentiation is. And don't misconstrue this. I'm not the person that says that, hey, the business model says that they should be student athlete amateurs and that so that we can keep the money. I'm not saying that. But the problem that I keep seeing is the more and more that you professionalize it, why am I going to watch a college game versus an NBA game in 20 years? Like, the NBA is a better product. Why am I going to watch college football versus the NFL? The NFL is a better product. Like, there has to be something that acknowledges this is different. But I just keep coming back to, man, this feels really, really complicated. No one seems to have a good plan, a good solution. But the thing that's a little bit more disheartening is I just want to see us, like, start trying. And it feels like right now nobody's really trying. It feels like we're just in a room having a bunch of discussions about it so we can pat ourselves on the back and feel good about it. But, like, even if we start trying a system that doesn't work, fine. Like, we can tweak it, but, like, let's at least acknowledge that this is a crisis moment, that something needs to be done.
Well, and along those lines, I'm going to give credit. You talk about acknowledging. I'm going to give credit to somebody I really don't like giving credit to. Dennis Dodd has a great story on CBS Sports right now about.
I hate to hear that.
I know. It's about the chaos that is sort of ensuing with some of these pending court cases that are out there. There's one that is like 10 months away from going to trial that a lot of member institutions are pushing the NCAA to settle, because the odds are they'll lose. And the
is that the back pay one? The
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this could be up to $3 billion.
And so, you know, it's and here's the thing, you know, like, if you start making these CFOs and athletic directors who are running budgets one way, like Chase said, you know, you're running a budget one way for all these years, a budget that financially really doesn't make sense, right? I mean, if you brought in the people from Ernst & Young and sat them down with an SEC, AD, and CFO, they would probably look at them and like cobras were coming out of their nose. What are you doing? So if you have this revenue sharing model and you don't figure out a way to contain it to some degree, you still have Title IX. So however many athletes you pay from the revenue producing sports, you've got to pay an equal number of athletes the same amount from other sports. You're going to just shut down programs. That's where it goes. If you ask people, If you ask people who have accounting degrees and accounting backgrounds and athletic directors to stop running this like the system that it is today and start running it like a business, okay, they will. And yeah, you'll cut a lot of the fat in departments, and you'll cut the fat on coaching staffs, and you'll cut a lot of analysts and that kind of thing. And everybody goes, okay, good, do that. Just, okay, fine. But just understand that in that is a lot of lost opportunity. And when people started NIL, it's the reason that I hate the word. When we started NIL, it was about the players getting compensated for their name, image, and likeness. It was never intended, for my opinion, you guys might disagree, it was never intended for guys to make $1 million a year to be a defensive end at Ohio State. I don't think that was the plan.
It was never intended, but it was always going to be the outcome. Those are two different things.
Yeah, that's how I view it. I mean, it was not intended for Carson Beck to buy a $300,000 Lamborghini. It was intended for but again, yes, if it was obviously going to always, like, this was the obvious outcome. And I mean, I guess to a certain degree, yes, maybe we're at this position because of the stubbornness of every decision maker to acknowledge that this is where this was headed. And so they never did anything about it. And now you've created this giant mess. But like at a certain point, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know, like if the system is blow it up, start over, like, I don't know. But to me, it's like this idea of just trying to have administrators go to Congress, bail us out. Like, that's the only solution. What do we even know the laws that they would pass? Would they stand up in court?
No, and Ted Cruz said you got about 2 months before Congress is essentially going to shut down because it's an election year. And so, you know, I mean, and no one knows exactly what Congress would pass. I mean, I don't know if anybody's paying attention to politics, but the Republicans and the Democrats don't exactly work together all that much.
Except weirdly on this issue.
It is weird that this is an issue that they're willing to kind of coexist on.
Well, because it's an easy win.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, look, we can all acknowledge what's going on and talk about what's going to happen. And like, we don't have answers on how to fix it. But I mean, you know, really not bury ourselves with the reality of it and go, hey, is this really stupid that in the collegiate model, 1% of the athletes are potentially tearing the entire structure down? Yes, it's incredibly stupid at the same time. Like, nobody's debating that, but you still got to fix it. You got to figure it out. You got to know what you're doing. You got to separate where you got to separate, and you got to separate in ways that maybe save as many things as possible. And yeah, I mean, we're too busy. I mean, Jeffrey gave a great example. We have so many 5-4 situations that once the answer is given on the 5 side, the internet and social media and the world and the rhetoric today just take it and go, oh, that was 9-0, and start yelling about it. It's like, no, idiots. It's very complicated.
I mean, to me, you can also distill it down to this because I got to go.
Yeah.
To a large degree, it's a tale as old as time. We have this giant pile of money and we got to figure out how to divvy it up. And everybody wants their piece. Everybody wants their share. And so, you know, maybe just break it down to that. Like, hey, here's what the core of the problem is. We've got all this money and we got to figure out what to do with it. Start from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, bud. Talk to
all
you soon.
Guys. Be good.
Jeffrey Wright joining us on the Campbell Clinic Hotline. Thanks for his time today. Last couple of minutes here, Neil, you're in Nashville, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, 6 o'clock tonight. They're from Bridgestone Arena. The rest of the games today, as I mentioned earlier, noon, Mississippi State and LSU. 2:30, Arkansas, South Carolina, and then 8:30 tonight, Georgia and Florida. I'm not going to break down Ole Miss and A&M. I'm not going to keep us longer for that reason. But I will say this. You mentioned two practices yesterday, a full practice, a lot of guys not back. That was simply Beard taking another step toward trying to establish culture yesterday?
Yeah, I think. Look.
Or is he just pissed off? What's up?
If you watched Saturday's game.
Yeah.
And I did. I I was paid to watch it. Otherwise, I think I probably would have checked out. So I'm not criticizing anybody who just left the building at halftime. But if you watched Saturday's game, and then you as a coach went back and watched the film of that game, I'm going to guess that the lack of effort on your players' part really pissed you off.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you look around the league last Saturday, right? Vanderbilt had nothing to play for, and they beat Florida at home. Arkansas had nothing to play for, and they almost beat, probably should have beaten, Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Missouri had nothing to play for, and they played fairly well at LSU. Georgia had nothing to play for, and they played really well at Auburn. So the whole, well, our season's kind of over, it's not an excuse to perform like that. To get beat on the boards like they did, just to get mauled on the boards. I'm guessing that was just a coach of, hey, look, you're not going to put on this uniform and play with that effort. It's not going to happen. So I do think tonight, the one interesting thing for me is because Ole Miss is not winning this tournament. So this tournament's not particularly interesting from a basketball standpoint, from an Ole Miss perspective. The one interesting thing tonight is how hard do they play?
Mm-hmm.
I'm really curious to see how hard they play. And if I'm Chris Beard, that's the one thing that's non-negotiable tonight. You win, you lose, whatever. I mean, if you win, you got to turn around tomorrow night, probably get your brains bashed in by Kentucky. But I want to see how hard they play. Because I think for a handful of guys who are even entertaining the thought of coming back, they're going to have to show some effort tonight, or that won't be an option for them.
But the gamblers out there are just the interested parties. Ole Miss is a 5.5-point underdog tonight. It's Texas A&M. The total is 140.5, so around 70 apiece there in that one. Mississippi State giving 4.5 to LSU today. South Carolina giving 6.5 to Arkansas today. And then Florida giving 8.5 to probably a pretty tired group of Georgia Bulldogs tonight in the nightcap. 8.5 there for Florida. So,
quick lines. Of those lines, I don't hate Mississippi State minus that number. They're
because they'll probably win and in.
Yeah. I wouldn't touch the Ole Miss game because I just don't know about the variables there. Arkansas had to play really hard last night to come back and win that game. They might be a little tired, but they're playing really well offensively. So I might avoid that one. And then, like you said, I don't hate Florida minus that number, even though the number's kind of big. Georgia might be a little tired. They're not as deep as Arkansas, and Florida's coming off that loss. I bet they play well.
Yeah, I kind of like Florida tonight too. For whatever reason, that's the one of the group that I'm picking out most there for that one. Saw they had a hell of a crowd last night, over 16,000, a tournament record for the opening night, whatever you want to call it.
Chase,
in Nashville. So
again, I mean, we started the podcast, at least my part of it, with this, and I. Number one, the tournament works in Nashville so well, you should never take it away. It's perfect for that venue, the whole deal, it's great. They had a big crowd last year for Ole Miss and South Carolina, two teams that were dead in the water. Those four teams last night are going nowhere. Missouri went 0-19. Arkansas is, I guess, right at 500. Mike's team, I guess he could probably talk them into, hey, we have a shot at the NIT. That's probably the most you can go with it. And they get that crowd there. You cannot, as long as the system is what the system is today, you cannot punt men's basketball. You just can't do it. And again, I give a lot of credit to Keith Carter and hiring Chris Beard and then understanding the market that's out there, the fact that there was going to be interest in Beard, there probably already was interest in Beard. Some of the rumors had at least a degree of legitimacy to them, and they got ahead of it. That's to his credit.
Yeah. So we'll see tonight, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, 6:00 there again from Nashville, Bridgestone Arena. Again, Chris Beard with a new 6-year contract. That really doesn't matter, but either way, commitments on both sides between the Rebels and what soon to be their second-year head coach. So Aggies and Rebels tonight from SEC Tournament. Ole Miss baseball opening up tomorrow night against South Carolina. They've won 11 of their last 12. Gamecocks coming to town for a 6:30 start. I see rain in the forecast through about noon maybe up to 1.5 inches. So maybe the amount causes a problem, but it should be cleared out. And then Saturday and Sunday look incredible from a weather standpoint. So we'll have coverage of all those things to you at rebelgrove.com, and then back to a normal podcast schedule on Monday. So take care, and we'll talk to you then.